Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, if you've ever felt like you need a brand makeover, that people maybe perceive you is not the way that you perceive yourself, or maybe you're changing careers, or you're thinking of just shaking things up and doing things a little differently, then my first guest is here to help. I'll introduce Dori Clark in just a moment. And later in this hour, since we're coming up to 7 years live on air this month. I can't believe it. 7 years with Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. We'll be celebrating our seventh anniversary at the end of this month. I'm going to bring you a couple of clips from interviews focused around my favorite books from the past year. So we'll do that throughout the rest of this month. And today we'll share insights from New York Times bestselling author Austin Kleon about how to get your work noticed for those who don't like traditional networking. And we'll end with New York Times bestselling author and award-winning investigative reporter Poe Bronson, who shares insights into winning and losing. So this is all about you this hour. First, I'm very pleased to welcome someone whose work is spot on, in my opinion, and very relevant in today's ever-changing market. It's an extremely valuable book. She's recognized as a branding expert by the Associated Press and Fortune. Dori Clark is a marketing strategy consultant and speaker for clients including Google, Microsoft, Yale University, Fidelity, and the World Bank. She's an adjunct professor of business administration at Duke's University School of Business and visiting professor for IE Business School in Madrid. She's guest lectured at Harvard Business School, the Harvard Kennedy School, Stanford, and the list goes on. And she's a frequent guest on MSNBC and appears in worldwide media, including NPR, The Wall Street Journal, and the BBC. Her new book is called Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future. Dori Clark, welcome.
Vicki, thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure. And I like this book a lot because I think it's obviously very timely. We live in a culture now where people don't have the same job for 20 years. We're constantly having to reinvent ourselves, really, to stay relevant. But this isn't about, you know, there are those people in the world who say, find out what the world wants and market yourself accordingly. But you say that's not what branding is really about. So tell us what this book is about and how you define it.
Absolutely. Well, you're exactly right that I think many people rebel at the idea of personal branding because they assume that it has to be some kind of fake, phony enterprise where you're sticking your finger to the wind and trying to present yourself how you think other people want you to be. But in fact, that's really the opposite of what we're talking about. If you want to be able to be recognized for your true skills and abilities, if you want to be able to make the contribution you know you're capable of, it actually starts from within. It starts from developing the kind of self-knowledge about who you are, what you want to be doing in the world, and then finding ways to share that and demonstrate it so that other people can really see the real you and your value can shine through.
Right. You know, one of my favorite definitions of branding comes from Richard Branson, who said, you know, it just is the image that's conjured up and the trust and expectations when people hear your name. And I think with the way that things are changing so rapidly in the workplace, I don't know about you, but I'm sure you run into this all the time in your line of work, but I run into many, many people who are constantly having to re-interview for their same job. So how do we keep adding to our existing resume so that people that we work with are recognizing our growth and recognizing the value that we bring?
It's such an important question. The way that I like to think about it after having done dozens and dozens of interviews for Reinventing You is that there's really two varieties of reinvention. One, which is perhaps the one that people think of more commonly, is if you lose a job, if you want to change careers, it's kind of a big transition in your professional life. But I think for all of us, we need to be doing a second kind of reinvention, which is a smaller, day-to-day process of reinvention. One of the people that I actually talked to for the book is a gentleman named Stephen Rice, who's the Executive Vice President of Human Resources for Juniper Networks in Silicon Valley. And he told me something that I thought was really astute, which is that he believes that the key foundational skill for employees today is adaptability, the ability to reinvent yourself. Because he says no matter what your job is, in 2 years or certainly in 5 years, it's probably going to be different than it is today because of the rapid change of technological advances and what companies need from you.
Yes.
And so if you're able to make reinvention a habit, then you're creating career security for yourself.
Right. And I know from reading your work, listening to a couple of YouTube videos, that you've reinvented yourself from necessity, really, many times, because you originally were a journalist and you've done several different things.
It's true. Yes, I started out as a political journalist, and reinvention was kind of forced on me inadvertently because I got laid off from my job as the newspaper industry was collapsing. And during a period in my 20s, I tried a lot of different things. Many of your listeners can probably relate. I worked on political campaigns, and my candidate always seemed to lose. I was a nonprofit executive director. I made a documentary film. So I did all of these things before settling in to the career that I have had for nearly a decade now, being a marketing strategy consultant and writer. But, you know, as part of that reinvention process, what I really learned is that for many people, because they're not necessarily paying very close attention to you, their perceptions of you may be, even in some cases, years out of date. And so it is incumbent upon us to make sure that we are communicating regularly with people and letting them know what we're doing, where we want to go professionally. Because if you just leave it to chance, they may be thinking of you, you know, back a few years ago, that cute little intern. And meanwhile, you've become a really talented professional.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, from my experience, I've seen it happen more to women than to men, because women tend to think, oh, if I work hard, I'll get noticed. Whereas, you know, men are raised a little differently and taught to point out their achievements a little more. You give a couple of examples in the book of how somebody got references. She was, I can't remember the exact words, Dory, but they said something like, well, she was a really nice girl and, you know, yeah, she did a great job. Whereas if it had been a guy, they probably would have phrased that differently. So if we're looking to give that kind of input, talk to us a little bit about some of the examples that might help.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're very right to bring up a gendered aspect to it. In our culture, it is generally considered more comfortable for men. Men are encouraged to be a little bit self-promotional, whereas women are discouraged from it early on. And in fact, women often face what, you know, this is an actual term from sociology, is called the likability conundrum, meaning that if you are perceived as being really likable, people sometimes question your competence. But meanwhile, of course, you're penalized if you're perceived as being so competent that you're not friendly. So it's hard to navigate those things, and each person needs to do it in their own way. So some of the best ways, if you say, okay, you know, I know that I should do a little bit of self-promotion, how can I do it in a way that that isn't obnoxious? One of my favorite techniques for doing this is something I talk about in Reinventing You called the wingman strategy. And this is actually taken from the research of a gentleman named Robert Cialdini, who is an eminent psychologist at Arizona State University. And the basic idea is that if you are perceived as bragging about yourself, nobody's going to really listen or like you. But if somebody else says those same things about you, people are gonna love it. They're going to listen and take it in. So you can make a pact with a like-minded friend or colleague and basically say, at the next conference, at the next networking event, I will talk you up if you talk me up.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes the pressure off of self-promotion and allows you to focus on finding ways to highlight your friend's good qualities, which hopefully you want to do anyway.
Yeah, and that's a really great idea and effective way of doing it, because a lot of people don't feel comfortable bragging. You know, many do, but a lot don't feel comfortable about blowing their own horn there. One of the things I want to talk about is you talk in the book about people who've got multiple degrees, but they found that people you know, really want to know. It's not like, what did you do 10 years ago? And what have you done yesterday? What have you done today that people are really interested in? So when we're looking to reinvent ourselves, how do we give that really current, up-to-date perception?
Yeah, it's important for sure to make sure that you're getting out the word about the things that you're doing. A really simple tip that I like to tell people is that we often have a very easy opportunity to do it. You know that in almost any social/professional situation, people are going to ask you two questions. One is, what do you do? And the other is some variation of, what have you been up to lately? And so many people fumble that opportunity. It's actually a golden chance for you to if you think about it, to be able to say something interesting. I mean, so many people say, oh, same old, or, you know, nothing much. But if you're able to think in advance about that question, what have you been up to, and use that as the opportunity, since they are asking, to highlight some interesting professional challenge that you're grappling with or some recent win or victory that you've had, it can really emblazon in someone's mind, oh, that's what she does. Interesting. I didn't realize that. And it can get a conversation going in a really productive direction.
Right. And I want to ask you a follow-up question to that, but we're going to take a very quick break so I don't have to interrupt you. We are talking with Dori Clark. Her book is called Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future. Great stuff here. So please do stay tuned. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Stay informed with news, traffic, and weather at the top of the hour, weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Oh, I'm not bragging on myself, baby, but I'm the one who loves you, and there's no one else, no.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Eric with Eric Ryder. I am here. You are here. I was just thinking about you playing. How did you find music about bragging? You know?
I'm just thinking if Lou Rawls had had a friend that could talk him up to this lady, he wouldn't have to brag on himself like he does in the song.
There we go. And that, of course, was an idea mentioned by Dori Clark, my guest here. Reinventing You is her book, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And I wanted to just follow on from the question we had before the break, Dori, and ask you this, because I know many people, and I've been through this myself, that we work on so many different kinds of projects. Like I might work in the corporate sector or the commercial sector or the editorial sector or production sector. You know, and it used to be that people did not like to think, you know, if I was going after a corporate project, they didn't like to think I was doing editorial and vice versa. Now I think that's okay to integrate for me. But you share some examples in the book. For example, one of the people you talked about was a businesswoman who wrote poetry and she always kept that hidden. But you say one of the key things when we are branding ourselves is to make note of those differentiating factors. So talk to us a little bit about how we can incorporate that and should we incorporate that.
Absolutely. It can be a real challenge because particularly in today's society, you have a lot of people who really want to be able to embrace different parts of themselves and leverage that professionally. For many of us, you know, even if you have a traditional day job, you may have other activities or passions on the side, and more of us have portfolio careers where we're doing multiple different things. And so describing that to people in a way that they can understand can be a challenge. So I have two thoughts about it. The first one is, as you mentioned from the book, in Reinventing You, I talk about a management consultant slash poet. And at first she was hiding it because she thought people would look down on her, that maybe, you know, she wasn't serious as a management consultant because of this. But ultimately she realized that what was different about her, the fact that she was a poet, was actually a competitive advantage. It made her stand out and be more memorable because it was this whole range of expertise, you know, the ability to work with the language deeply and understand how to communicate that other management consultants really couldn't bring to the table. So she owned it and really began talking about it, and it made her very successful. The other piece that I'll just mention briefly is that in Reinventing You, I talk about the idea of finding the common narrative thread, because no matter how disparate your interests are, there's usually some strand that connects them. And so I talk about Tim Ferriss, who some people might recognize as the author of The 4-Hour Workweek, and, you know, it's a popular business book, but he followed it up with a book called The 4-Hour Body, which was a fitness book. It might seem completely random that you would go from a business book to a fitness book, but he actually said, no, it's not that I'm a business author who's having this weird deviation. It's that I focus on lifestyle design, which is a category that he created. And under this rubric, all of these things fit in because it's, you know, how do you create a better and more productive life in every aspect? And if you do that, then all of a sudden the light turns on and people say, yes, now I see how it fits together.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Tim Ferriss was in the body business long before he did the 4-Hour Workweek. I think that's why he actually got to write that book there.
Exactly.
So let's say that somebody is in a position where they just don't know. They don't know. I don't know how to reinvent myself. I know what I want to do. And you talk about something called 360 feedback, which, of course, you know, I used to work in the corporate sector. So, of course, I've been subject to that several times. But tell us a little bit about 360 feedback and why that can be so valid.
Yes. For many people, it can be hard to see ourselves. I mean, we all know that that sometimes other people have a little bit of a clearer perspective because we're so much in the forest of who we are and what we do. We almost know too much about ourselves. And so sometimes it can help to have clarity from outside about what are we really good at? Where do we seem to excel? And so in the corporate world, it's fairly common to have what they call a 360 analysis done, which is that usually an executive coach will interview your boss, your subordinates, and your peers like a circle, 360, and then give you anonymous feedback based on that, so you can really get a clear-eyed view of your strengths and weaknesses. And that's wonderful, and sometimes your employer will provide that. But even if they don't, what I suggest in Reinventing You is that people can undertake their own free version of that. A really simple way to do it, which I think can be very enlightening for most people, is to take about half a dozen of your friends and colleagues and literally ask them a question that will take 2 minutes for them to answer, which is, if you only had three words to be able to describe me, what would they be? And very quickly, you know, by maybe the second or third person, you are going to start to see patterns in their responses, and it's going to enable you to really begin to get at what is unique about you, what is coming through the strongest, and where do people really see you?
Right. I love it in the book. You say this is one of your favorite quotes, that if three people tell you you're a horse, buy a saddle.
That's right.
I think it's very important to mention, though, that we need to be selective about who we're asking to do that, because we don't want people who are just going to give us what we want to hear. We need to hear a little critical feedback, I think, in order for us to grow and change.
That's right. And equally, you don't want to go to frenemies who might say things just to mess with your head. Ideally, you want to pick people who you like and you respect and you think they are going to give you a really fair assessment.
Right. So what have you learned? I don't think you can put a book like this together and talk with the kind of people that you talked with, because you talked with some top executives here, but without learning yourself. So what did you learn about Dory Clark when you were writing this book?
Well, one of the most important lessons that I learned personally is that something I wish I had done differently, and something, therefore, that I encourage people who are readers of Reinventing You to do, is I waited too long to start creating content. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. Basically, when I think about the reinventing process, and you know, from all of the interviews that I gathered about this, it is really a three-step process. The first is figuring out what your brand currently is. How are you currently perceived by the people around you? Second is beginning to create a proactive vision of how you want to be seen in the world and taking steps toward accomplishing that. And then third and finally, it's about living your brand and making sure that once you have that vision in place, that the word really gets out and that people come to understand it. Because your brand isn't just what you say about yourself. Your brand is everything that you do. And so how you convey that message is really important. And so something that is a key part that, thanks to the internet, we now all have the ability to do, and something that I waited too long personally to do, is to create content, you know, meaning blogging or getting involved on social media like Twitter and things like that, because by doing that, by sharing your ideas with the world, and it could be, you know, even an Instagram account, whatever it is, it's a way of letting like-minded people find you, understand where you're coming from. It lets potential clients or employers test drive your ideas and see if you're a fit, and you begin to build a name for yourself so that people are actually seeking you out, which is one of the most important things when it comes to your personal brand. You don't want them to settle for just anyone. You want them to say, I want him or I want her.
Right.
And creating content is your way of sharing your ideas and your vision with the world. And that is something that I would recommend to all of your listeners, Vicki.
Yeah, and we're almost at the end of our segment, Dory. We could talk for a couple of hours on this subject because I love it. But, you know, when I first started out 16 years ago as a full-time free agent, the advice I received was specialize. And I couldn't narrow down to what I really wanted to spend the next, you know, number of years working on, because I have so many interests. Yes, there are things that I'm stronger in now than others, but I chose to remain a generalist. So talk to us a little bit about specialist versus generalist and the benefit, pros and cons of both, if you would.
Well, it's such an important question. I'm actually in the process of writing a book right now.
Yes.
it's going to be coming out next March about the concept of how to become a recognized expert in your field. And, you know, one of the things that I talk about in it is that it actually is an accelerant in becoming recognized if you develop a reputation as an expert in a niche field, simply because it's easier to become an expert on, say, wearable technology than it is to become an expert in all of technology in the world. It's too broad. So if you start narrow, then you get known and you can build out from that. That's an easy way to do it. And if someone is called to that path, it's a great way to get known. However, there are people like you and also like me where it just doesn't really feel right because mm-hmm. there's not one particular niche that, you know, we love above all else. You want to be a generalist. And so in some ways it's a harder path because you have to toil in the wilderness a little bit. You have to get a lot of different experiences. But it is, I believe, an equally valid path because even if it takes a little bit longer to gain recognition in some ways, you are bringing to it a depth and a richness that ultimately is going to make you a really valuable contributor. And so if you're sharing your process, creating content, and bringing people along the way with you, you can also begin to get recognized and develop a really powerful personal brand.
Yes. Well, I thank you for being with us today, Dori. The book is called Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future. I think there's some really valuable information in here. This was published by Harvard Business Review Press, but I don't think it's just for executives. I think it's for anybody out there who just wants to pull things together and maybe move in a different direction or strengthen the direction they're already going in.
Thank you so much. I really am grateful for the chance to be here and talk with you.
Yeah. And a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with.
Absolutely. Reinvention is something that anyone can do. One of my most popular blog posts I ever wrote for the Harvard Business Review blog was called How to Reinvent Yourself After 50. And so people at any age, at any professional stage, can do this. It's never too late. We can reinvent ourselves in ways large or small. And Vicky's exactly right. The book is intended for any kind of person who wants to change careers, change their life, or just make sure that the people who are currently around you better understand the contribution that you can make in the world.
Perfect. Dori Clark, thank you so much for being with us today. And listeners, you can find out more about Dori's work at doriclark.com. She has a ton of free resources up there, a ton of articles up there all about this subject. And of course, the book is Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
He's a fella, the man who invented himself. He's a fella, the man who invented himself. When you need...
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to NuPro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, July 20th, finally, they're back. Two of our most popular guests ever, adventure travelers Helen and Bill Thayer, are in the studio. We'll catch up and find out what they've been up to. Get all the details about the trips they're planning now. They're the most amazing and fascinating people I've ever met, so join us for the fun on Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Spread the word. Your favorite shows are on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
The man who invented himself. He's the fella, the man who invented himself.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And, of course, we're talking about reinventing yourself today. We just did so with Harvard Business Review contributor and Forbes contributor, Dori Clark, author of Reinvent You. And we're going to follow that on, as I said at the beginning of the hour. We're celebrating our 7th anniversary this month. And so I'm going to bring you a couple of my favorite books from past shows. We're just going to bring you some clips from interviews with the authors. And to follow on from Dori's live segment that we just did, I have a segment by that I did with Austin Kleon. He wrote a book called 10 Show Your Work, 10 Ways to Share Your Creativity and Get Discovered. If you go to his website, he describes himself as a writer who works with words and books and pictures. But he actually, in reality, is a New York Times bestselling author of 2 books. He speaks about creativity in the digital age for many organizations all over the world. Pixar, Google, FX, TEDx, The Economist. He's been on NPR's Morning Edition, PBS NewsHour, in the New York Times, The Atlantic, called him positively one of the most interesting people on the internet. And his name is Austin Kleon. His book, again, is Show Your Work, 10 Ways to Share Your Creativity and Get Discovered. And I'm going to bring you a clip from that interview right now.
Not to be too self-promotional, but I showed my work. I started out right out of college. I didn't have a body of work, and I wasn't really, you know, I didn't have a lot of my own stuff to show. But I realized right away that we're living in this culture in which you can kind of start your own thing very quickly. So I did what a lot of young writers do. I started a blog. And instead of worrying about going to grad school or getting an art gallery show or getting published, I just made stuff and put it on my blog. And from that simple step and continuing to do that, a whole career is formed for me. And so in this next book, Show Your Work, I really wanted to kind of, you know, kind of analyze how it happened for me and how it happened for a lot of the people in my life, and to kind of give people a user's manual for kind of operating in this way.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I love this book. I took it, I was creative and I took it to the beach to read this weekend.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
It's really aimed at anybody who just, enjoys gaining more perspective on creativity, anyone who needs a creative lift. But specifically, I think it's really beneficial for those who don't like self-promotion. Many cultures, it's not considered a good thing. In my culture, it's not, you know, you'd be called a braggart if you're going around self-promoting all the time. You do it in such a great way, showing, which of course is what the book is all about, showing your work. How did you come up with the idea for the book?
Well, so a lot of people on my last book tour, Behind Steel Like an Artist, so many people came up to me and asked me questions about self-promotion. You know, they asked me how to get their stuff out into the world, and they asked me how I did it. And so I started thinking about self-promotion, and I realized, you know, a lot of the people I look up to and the people I try to emulate, they actually don't self-promote. What they almost do the opposite of self-promoting. What they do is they share, and they focus on sharing. And instead of, you know, wasting their time networking at cocktail parties, what they do is they focus on their work, and they stay in their studios and in their offices. And what they do, though, is they almost let people look over their shoulder while they're working. Every day, they find little bits and pieces of their process, not just their products, that they can share with people. And in the, you know, and in the process of sharing their process, people feel closer to the work, and they feel like they're part of that creative process. And then when these people, their products are ready to go, people are already interested in them because they've watched them being made. And so I wanted to write a book about this kind of new way of working, because I think it's like a way of working that not everyone has had access to, but now we all have access to with the internet and new tools like social media.
Yeah. So that's obviously why you started the book. You started it with a quote from John Cleese, who said, creativity is not a talent. It's a way of operating. And you talk about that from your perspective. One of the things that I'm going to go back and reread is the chapter on think process, not product. You know, I've spent years working with corporations and commercial ventures. And I constantly have to remind myself, it is about the process when I'm working on my projects. It's not just about the end result. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you would. You say process is messy.
Yeah, like process is the thing, you know, normally, you know, that's the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that we usually try to keep hidden, you know. Process is messy. It's the daily work of what you do. It's like all the things that you do in your day. But I think the thing about process is that for most of us, if we love our work, that's the stuff that's really good for us. That's the stuff that's hard, but it's the verb of the work, so to speak. You know, it's the things we actually do. And the nouns of the work, the products that we come up with, that's the thing that we usually share with people. But I think that people are really interested in the process of what people do just as much as the products. And so if you can figure out a way to share your process in a way that's useful or helpful or interesting to other people, then that's really the way that you can figure out how to show your work.
Yeah, and I love that you did this on your blog. Guess where I spent most of my time when I was researching for this chat here? Most of the time was spent looking behind the scenes. I always think as a writer, you know, nobody's going to be interested in that process. And, you know, I wish I worked more in pictures because it's more visual, but you made it visual. And talk a little bit about how you do that, how you do share your work, if you would.
Well, I'll give you a very specific, concrete example. So I'm on book tour right now, and when you have a book come out, it's very easy for you to become what I call a piece of human spam. You know, that is, you become that person that only speaks about your own work and you don't talk about anything else. And so one of the things, I love Instagram. I love the platform Instagram, the photo sharing service. So what I try to do when I'm out on book tour is I try to take pictures of the city I'm in, but I also try to, like, take pictures of the people I meet and the book events that we do, and I try to share the things that I'm looking at, and I try to emphasize the fact that book tour is really about not just me and the show I'm putting on, but the people who show up and the things they share with me. And so that's like one of the ways that I try to turn, and I try to show the behind the scenes of what I'm doing and what it's like to be on book tour, so people don't just think I'm this like endless promotional machine, that they understand that I'm a human being doing work out in the world, you know?
Right, right. And it is fascinating. And the full title of the book is Show Your Work, 10 Ways to Share Your Creativity and Get Discovered. When you do get discovered, of course, we are open to criticism, which stops some people from, you know, opening up and sharing as much as they probably should to get discovered. You share a story in the book. There's a chapter called Learn to Take the Punch, and you say, don't feed the trolls. And you share a story of somebody who heckled you on Twitter. Tell us how you handle that kind of situation.
Yeah, so I had, my son is 16 months old, and when he was born, I was in the hospital room, and I was working on this new book. And of course, you know, with your first child, you're worried that your life is ending forever.
Are you right?
if you're a writer, you're worried that you'll never write anything good again after you become a parent. And so I was sitting in the hotel room, or I was not in the hotel room, the hospital room, and I had tweeted out, you know, that my son was born and that he was healthy and whatever. And this woman got online, and she started quoting quotes from my book, Steal Like an Artist, and saying little things like, ha, try that when it's 3 a.m. and the kid's up screaming, you know? And she tweeted like five or six of these, you know, kind of awful things at me about how my life was basically over now that I was going to have a son. Mm-hmm. And what I realized in that process was this woman, it had nothing to do with me and everything to do with her own experience. is that what this woman was really doing is she was talking about her own frustrations as a parent and the way that her dreams had kind of been squashed by becoming a parent. And so the lesson I learned from that is you always have to evaluate where criticism and feedback is coming from and who that person is that's giving it to you. And then you can figure out whether you want to take that criticism and feedback and put it into your work.
Right. Good advice. You end the book with a chapter called Stick Around. The book is based on 10 principles. This is the 10th. When you find yourself going down a rabbit hole, and I know you blogged about how difficult you found this process writing this last book. When you find yourself going down a rabbit hole, what do you do to regroup or get back on track?
I think breaks are very underrated, and not just big breaks. You know, I think a sabbatical is good for everybody, but of course, not all of us can take sabbaticals. So what I recommend is taking mini sabbaticals. You know, get away from your desk, take a walk, go get some exercise, go eat lunch, just the simple act of getting a little bit of distance in between you and your problems. I think that always jump starts my own creativity and gets me back on track. So, the way to think about it is go away so you can come back.
Right, right. And you also say on procrastination that working on a couple of different projects at the same time is good for you. And I find that too. If you're kind of stuck on one or not feeling too creative about it, you can jump to another and kind of move forward that way.
Yeah, I call this productive procrastination. And it's exactly what you said. You know, when you get caught on one project, jump over to the other and it feels fresh and new. And then when you get caught up with that, jump back to the other and keep using the two as a way to get more and more work done.
When you find things that you genuinely enjoy, you say, don't let anyone else make you feel bad about it. Don't feel guilty about the pleasure you take in the things you enjoy. Celebrate them. Tell us how you celebrate the things that you enjoy, Austin.
Well, I try really hard. Like, I'll be very specific. Like, I, as a writer myself, so much of my work is fed by my reading. And so I try to be really open and honest about the books I'm reading. And so I do a lot of reading for pleasure, not just for work. So I try as hard as I can to be really honest about, what I'm reading. I don't worry too much about what people are going to think about me based on my book choices. So, yeah, I'll post about some great, creativity book or whatever, but I'll also post about the Elmore Leonard thriller that I read or the hard-boiled novel that I read for fun. And I try to, be open and honest about all my influences because, if you hide your influences, if you hide the things you really love, you're not going to run into your people, the people that love those things too.
Right, right. One of the premises of your book too is tell good stories. So tell us what good story means to you.
Well, we have this kind of faulty idea that our work speaks for itself. You'll hear a lot of artists say that, my work speaks for itself. But I think it's, what the stories you tell about your work totally impact the way people feel about it and the way that they value it. And so I think the way to become a good storyteller is to saturate yourself with good stories, surround yourself with good stories, figure out how they work, and then that'll help you tell your own story.
And that was a clip from the Austin Kleon interview. Show Your Work is the name of his book, 10 Ways to Share Your Creativity and Get Discovered. And we will be right back with another clip from another one of my favorite books, this time with Poe Bronson. So please do stay tuned. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
There's an exciting new astrology hour, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. with Deborah Silverman. Deborah's unique blend of psychology and astrology turns planetary language into plain English. Join us for an interactive hour that's guaranteed to give you personal insights in a fun and entertaining way. Tune in to Deborah Silverman Live. Whatever your life question, marriage, job, family, relocation, or just curiosity, call for a live reading, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. and visit Deborah's website at DeborahSilvermanAstrology.com.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard-approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate, making a difference, one word at a time.
Good news, Belgium. We're streamed worldwide at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And ending today's show, we're looking back in this last half hour at some of my favorite books from the past year to celebrate our 7th anniversary with KKNW. We're going to hear a clip from an interview I did with award-winning journalist Poe Bronson. Excuse me. He's been on the show twice to share insights from his New York Times best-selling book, Top Dog, which he co-wrote with Ashley Merriman. They together have won 9 national awards for their reporting. They've written for Time, Newsweek, New York Times, The Guardian, and numerous other publications. And in this particular clip, we talked about their New York Times bestseller, Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing. Here's Poe Bronson. I'm wondering, you've been talking about this book for a long time now. Do you ever get tired of it, or are you still winning with it?
You know, it's kind of an interesting question, Vicki, because one of the things that I learned about myself, I think it was true, but I tried to hide it, but the book let me free it up, is it has to do with competitive styles. And Ashley and I, my co-writer, have very different competitive styles. I am someone who likes to improvise. I like the high pressure, but for a short duration. I like to then hug it out, go have a beer, you know, and recuperate.
Right.
Ashley is very much of someone who likes it never to be too intense. She likes lots of preparation and very little improvisation, and she doesn't want it to end. She likes the continuous work that's like a slow, steady, resentful burn kind of thing, and we're two different styles. And we learned that there was underlying science for these patterns, and it helped me recognize myself. And so, yeah, sure, when the book came, hardcover came out, worked very hard for 3 months and then completely took a break and let myself rest. Ashley would not let herself. She was still going off on speeches every week. And so, you know, it's great for me to talk about the book at a time like this with the Olympics going on, the Academy Awards coming up, a lot of competition going on here in February. But I'm keyed up to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, because I rested and recuperated. And Ashley's, you know, she's still going strong. You know, that's her style.
Well, it's interesting you brought that up, because I want to, that's one of the questions I want to ask, is how do we identify our own competitive style? Because obviously we need to know that if we want to be successful.
There's a lot of different factors discussed in the book that affect our competitive style, and quite a few of them have to do with the psychology and biology of our reaction to stress and pressure. One of the factors that's, you know, this isn't, you could go get yourself a genetic test for this, but you kind of don't need to if you understand the idea. You know how some people seem to be really good with pressure, but when it's no pressure, they kind of, you know, just kind of like fine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other people who are great as long as it's a no-pressure environment. When it's high pressure, you kind of can't count on them,
mm-hmm.
and they crumple. Well, it turns out to be the gene for that. The gene called the Compte gene, it's been nicknamed the warrior or worrier gene, and it's evenly distributed in our population. And so there are warrior genes and worrier genes out there, such that 1/4 of us have only warrior, and 1/4 of us have only worrier, and 1/2 of us have a mix. And if we have the warrior gene, we like stress and pressure, and in fact, our brains cannot think our clearest without the pressure. The pressure raises the dopamine levels up so we think clearly.
Yeah.
Then there's the other 1/4 of us, the opposite 1/4 of us, think great without stress and pressure, but we actually
any stress and pressure in our brain does not work as well. We cannot think of, we'll get the job done maybe because we have a lot of grit and determination, but can't really think quite as clearly in that circumstance. Mm. And that's actually a gene. It's controlled by a gene that's evenly distributed in the pituitary. It's not like some rare gene we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, everybody's got one of these two styles.
That explains a lot. And I was laughing there because I think I'm one of those people who needs that, a certain amount of tension, as I call it.
No, that's right. It makes sense. You're performing, right? You perform all the time. And I'm that kind of person, too. And Ashley's the opposite, you know? And I've passed this on to my son, who is great on standardized tests, great in high-stakes soccer tournaments, you know, under stress and pressure. He turns it up.
Right.
And we don't quite know what I've got with my daughter yet. She's 9, haven't quite figured that out. But you know, once you see it, it's really quite apparent.
Well, since you're talking of children there, you say that when children make mistakes, this was an article there by Ashley, actually, in the New York Times on the subject. When children make mistakes, our job should not be to spin those losses into decorated victories. Instead, our job is to help kids overcome setbacks, to help them see that progress over time is more important. Because I've thought this for a long, long time. We give out trophies and awards, and they become meaningless.
Yeah, and I was a volunteer, you know, growing up in the Northwest. My dad was a volunteer, and he helped run one of the soccer clubs in Seattle. I came down here, and as a volunteer, I run all of youth soccer in San Francisco, and that's what we used to do. You know, every kid got a trophy, and we've trimmed it way back to make them meaningful. And the thing, it's not just about what winning means. It really is important to not hide losing, because when we pretend losses are actually some sort of actual victory in a way, it almost as if losing is unmentionable. We make it more taboo to our kids. And think about this for a second. So to compete means to risk exposing yourself, to risk losing. Now, for us adults, the greatest accomplishments of our life took a risk. It was a risk to ask that person out. It was a risk to apply for that job. It was a risk to change careers. A risk to apply to that university that might reject you. A risk to move to this country. Right? You have to take big risks in life. Now, if you're afraid of losing, you're afraid of falling on your face in front of everybody, you'll never take that risk. But you have to do is start young and realize it's okay to lose. Yeah, we lost. No big deal. We come back and we play again next week. And it's through this sort of like low-cost, not taboo losing. You're not hiding it. You're not being yelled at for losing. But you experience losing and you realize it's not the end of the world. And when you realize it's not the end of the world, you won't be afraid to take risks later in life.
Right.
Important risks that really will define their life.
Right. Some fascinating material in here. I know I said that a lot last time we talked, but it just is. And some of it, you know, if I hadn't read it in the book and I knew it was and hadn't known it how well researched it was, I would have been kind of skeptical about it. But one of the things I want to ask here, especially because my producer is a musician and he has his own band, and one of the things in the book is that you say the best symphony orchestras have the most miserable musicians. What's going on there?
It's true. And then we're talking about symphonies and orchestras from around the world, high level, big city, you know, symphonies and orchestras. And so, first of all, to have a great orchestra, you need to have great musicians. And those great musicians do not grow up thinking they're going to be third chair, right? They grow up trying and hoping to be the soloist, the star. And then they don't quite make it, and they're forced to be on a team, basically. And rather than getting to stand out, they have to fit in. And there's not their natural inclination. So to get stars on a team to be team players, you know, that's how you create a really good team. But they may not really be team players inherently. Mm. And so that's a starting point. The other point is that, you know,
we've got just about 30 seconds here, Poe. We have about 30 seconds.
Okay, we all encounter difficulty, and it turns out that teams where there's discord is allowed tend to be able to challenge each other and push each other to pivot and change and improve. And teams that are just focused on team harmony are so focused on it being nice and friendly that they don't respond to change and challenge very well.
Interesting. Well, listeners can find out more. This book is packed full of really great information, and it's based on scientific fact. Top Dog, The Science of Winning and Losing by Poe Bronson and Ashley Merriman. And you can find out more about their work at topdogbook.com and more about Poe at poebronson.com and Ashley at ashleymerriman.com. Poe Bronson, thanks for being with us again. And that's it for today, folks. We will be back next week with live segments, and we'll also bring you a couple of clips from past shows, but I'm only featuring my very favorite books from the year. So please do join us next week. Meanwhile, if you have questions or comments on today's show, and of course the live segment with Dori Clark, we talked to about reinventing you, you can find me at info@conversationslive.net. or at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. And you can also follow and chat with me at Vicky St. Clair on Twitter and at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair on Facebook. See you next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.